Third acts can begin in a lot of different ways, and they can propel all sorts of changes, like trying something new, taking a chance you might have missed, or giving something up. Dan Pink has written several best-selling books about motivation, work, and behavior, and his most recent, called When, is all about timing. He says people who reach their third acts are usually less sad than energized, because something about facing an ending seems to push people in new directions. Steve Paulson wanted to know how.
You have this phrase called the nine enders. Like people who are 29 or 39 or 49, they think about things differently.
Absolutely. There's a whole psychology of endings, and the work on nine enders is from Adam Alter at NYU and Hal Hirschfield at UCLA, who looked at the age at which people were most likely to run their first marathon. And it turned out, as you say, people are disproportionately likely to run their first marathon at ages 29, 39, 49, and 59.
So in other words, the 39-year-old is much more likely to run the first marathon than a 38-year-old or a 40-year-old.
29-year-olds are twice as likely to run a first marathon as 30-year-olds or 28-year-olds, which is weird because there's no like physical difference, right? But wait, you hear this. 49-year-olds are three times as likely to run a first marathon as 50-year-olds. Now, this makes no sense, and it all has to do with what is the effect of endings on the way we see our lives and the way we behave? And when we see something ending, A, it can energize us. We kick a little harder. And it also seems to trigger some kind of search for meaning. And at some level, running a first marathon is, I don't want my life to disappear. Time is moving quickly. I want to do something significant. And I want to do it before I turn 30, or I want to do it before I turn 50. But yeah, when something comes to an end, it energizes us. There's all kinds of research on that. There's freaky research out there showing that you give half the people a gift certificate that expires in 3 weeks and half the people a gift certificate that expires in 2 months. And the people who had less time are more likely to cash it in because the ending was more salient.
You sort of forget about it if it's 2 months.
Right.
Yeah. Dan, you talk about how life has a natural beginning, middle, and end. And I want to focus on that last act. How would you describe Act 3?
Well, a lot happens in Act 3. Basically, if we think about our lives as three acts, we've got the first 25 years, the second 25 years, and the third 25 years. And there's some interesting research out there showing certain things that happen in that final act. So Eric Erickson, years and years ago, came up with this idea of what he calls generativity. We become less focused on ourselves. We become less focused on accomplishment, and we become more focused on our legacy.
When you talk about third act, are you talking about post-retirement, or could this be also final stages of a career?
It's both. I think it's idiosyncratic. You know, I think what's happening right now in the American workforce is a refashioning of what retirement is. There are fewer people who are fully retired. So when we get to that final act, you have people who are doing things that are much more hybrid. They might have left their main job that they had during their middle years and are doing something else that's a different kind of career, but they're only doing it part-time. So they were an engineer at a big company, and now they are teaching math after school. Or they were a physician, and now they have a paid role part-time at a church. So there's a lot of idiosyncrasy at the individual level in what people are actually doing.
Why would people want to do that? As opposed to the old model, which is you have a big career, and you retire, and you go off, and you smell the roses, as opposed to doing something else that maybe doesn't pay very well, but is more meaningful.
Because growing roses is far more challenging and satisfying than smelling roses. It's that simple. Like we're more satisfied as human beings when we do things. And again, there's a long line of research about this in the field of psychology, where we think that leisure is actually going to be the time when we feel the best, when we're most satisfied. And from Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, the famous University of Chicago social psychologist, to the present day, we know that isn't true. People are more satisfied when they're doing something, when they have a combination of challenge, purpose, and relationships. And that's what leads to a satisfying life. And what you also see, again, in psychological research is some really interesting behavior at that stage of life. To me, one of the most interesting things going on is the work of Laura Carstensen at Stanford. And she has looked at friendship networks. And it's basically, what is your network of friends and people you care about? And she charted the trajectory of that over the lifespan. So we'll go back to this idea of Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3. You have this rise in the number of friends that you have, the size of your social network throughout Act 1, really, really rises in Act 2. And then around the age of 60, there is a dramatic drop in the size of our friendship networks. Now, that seems superficially like a sad story.
Right. It seems like, oh, we're so lonely then.
We're lonely. People are disappearing on us. And Carstensen's work on this is just so important and profound. So she asked people to organize their friends in three circles. The inner circle, these are people I absolutely can't live without. The middle circle, hey, they're awesome. I like them. They're great. Outer circle, hey, they're good. I like them. They're okay. Yeah, they're fun. And what she found is that when she divided the circles that way, all of the drop in the total size of the friendship networks was the middle and outer circle.
Hmm.
And what's interesting about that, she says, quote, they were actively eliminated. That is, people were making the affirmative move to what I like to call editing their friends.
Hmm.
They were editing out the people. And basically, when they got to that final act, they said, wait a second, I don't have all the time in the world.
And I don't actually really care about these people.
Yeah. And it's a combination of the two. I like these people, but I have limited time. So do I want to spend my limited time with people I kind of sort of like, or do I want to spend that limited time with the people who are most deeply meaningful to me?
So basically, you start editing your whole life at that point. You start weeding out the stuff that you just don't really care about.
Erik Erikson, the great developmental psychologist, intuited 60 years ago in this move toward generativity. I want meaning. I want, what's my legacy going to be? Because in that circle is almost always your closest family. So you think, okay, what am I going to leave to my kids? Now, I don't mean that in the monetary sense. I mean, what kind of legacy am I going to leave to my kids when I'm gone and my grandkids remember me? What kind of person am I going to be remembered as?
So let me rephrase this slightly differently.
Yeah.
And make it a little more personal about me. So I'm in my late 50s, and I think unavoidably for someone at my stage of life, you know, I'm starting to think about, you know, how many years do I have left in this job? I've spent my whole career in public radio. Do I keep doing the same thing, a job I like, or do I think about doing something new? How do you sort out those kinds of questions?
I don't think there's a perfect universal way to do that. I think, though, it's important for people, if they have the ability, to ask those kinds of questions. And what you often see, and there's some great research from a researcher at the London Business School named Erminia Ibarra, her research has shown is that the changes that people make in these kinds of circumstances are less vocational changes than really identity changes. So for you, and I don't want to turn this into a therapy session here.
Go ahead, though, if you wish.
Sure, of course. I'm completely unlicensed and unqualified, but let me go forward. The decision you're making at that point is not only a vocational decision, what should I do? It is an identity decision. Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm totally making this up.
Sure.
Did you say, I'm going to leave public radio, but you know what? There's one avocation I have. I don't know if you're a sports fan or a music fan or something like that. And you know what? I got some time. I've got clearly the talent and experience. I'm going to do a short podcast on ska music or bluegrass music.
Yeah. For me, it would be the tennis podcast.
Okay, perfect. And maybe you have some, you're going to maybe round up the tennis players who you watched and admired when you were a kid. So you're going to go say, what's Jimmy Connors doing right now?
Mm-hmm.
And let's get Martina Navratilova on here. And then it might be that, hey, you know what I really want to do? I actually want to go maybe write a book about tennis. And so this identity ends up having a, not kind of an off-on switch, but a dimmer switch. And that's what Ibarra's research has shown.
And one of the things that you write about also is that people later in life tend to live more in the present, more in the now than other people, which is interesting because you might think, oh, they'd be thinking a lot about their past.
Yeah. Well, they're thinking less about the future because there's less of it.
Yeah.
But there's another thing that we also know about this stage of life, and you see this in a whole range of data across different nations. If you look at the shape of well-being over time, it's shaped like a U, so that early in our life, our well-being, our subjective well-being, are we satisfied with our life, is reasonably high. It dips, not considerably, but enough. So if you take, say, middle-class people in America, at some level, many of their motivations in their quote-unquote careers are achievement motivations, being well-known, making money, having an influence. But what you also see is that the curve goes back up markedly later in life. And so if you put these things together, what you see is, hey, people are editing their friends. They are living in the present. They are focused on generativity and their legacy. And wait a second, they're a lot happier than a lot of other people. And that can begin giving us, I think, some clues across the lifespan into what constitutes the good life. And I think about this myself. It's like, whoa, is my life half over? I'm 53 years old. I say, is my life half over? Holy smokes. Like, that concentrates the mind. And I think back and say, let's say I live to be, knocking wood here, let's say I live to be 83, okay, which is a good, healthy life, longer than my father lived. I look back 30 years to when I'm 23, and I think, holy smokes, that happened like this. That was yesterday. I was 23 yesterday. That all happened in a blink. Is the next 30 years going to happen in a blink? And maybe it is time for me to reckon with this question of who am I really? Why am I here? And what is my legacy going to be?
Do you think about that? Are you starting to think about, okay, what is your third act?
Do I think about it myself?
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think about it in terms of acts, but I do find a greater sense of urgency in that question. Now, the therapy's for me.
Yep.
Now, I do think about it as someone who has spent most of my professional life as a writer and having written 6 books. As analytical of a person as I am, I sort of look at it that way. It's like, well, what's going to be the marginal return on the 7th book in terms of my own satisfaction and contribution to the world? And maybe there is something else I can be doing that is perhaps a better expression of who I really am intrinsically, and perhaps a better way for me to contribute to the world, and perhaps even raising the stakes a bit if I ever have grandchildren, they look back on that and say, whoa, wait a second, my grandfather did that super cool thing when he was 70 years old? That's awesome.
And that's Dan Pink talking with Steve Paulson. Dan's most recent book is called When, The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. So I'm curious, do you think of yourself as in your third act? And if so, what are you doing differently? And what's your advice for others? We want to know. Share your tips at ttbook.org/question.